The title of this last session is Staying Wild, Staying Holy. Do you remember the phrase, a promising journey, at some point this weekend? Promising journey. It was the phrase that Paul Santmeier used in his book, something, I forget the name of the book, Nature in Travail, The Travail of Nature. It's a book that's over at the bookstore. Promising Journey is his alternative to the spiritual ascent, if you recall. Spiritual ascent is getting away from what's human and approaching God. The promising journey is going together toward a promise that God has given to the people, and he sees that as the real underlying theme of the of Hebrew scripture. And the reason that I like that phrase is because it describes so many things that are true in my life and perhaps in yours. And I look at this weekend, for example, as a promising journey. You always feel a little unsure when you're starting out something like this. I don't know how you guys have developed in that. A couple of us were talking about coming up to Holden. I think it was Di, who works at with the kids in the school, said that the first time she came here from Ohio, she was really excited driving all the way out here, and when she finally got to the dock in Chelan, an absolute panic engulfed her. And if you were listening to the entertainment last night at dessert, the Holden Village Blues was sort of the same kind of thing. Coming to a place that you really don't exactly know what it's going to be like, there's a sense of promise, but also a sense of fear, I suppose. And as lead co-leader of this group, I know that Dick never feels this because he's never scared. But I was pretty panicked, and I knew that it would be a promising journey, but I also knew that I might be totally lost most of the time. And I feel like that wasn't the case, but it's because of grace, not because of works. Part of the grace is that I sensed all of you moving in some new and wonderful directions, setting yourself free from a kind of reserved and isolated, the kind of life that the individualism which you brought with you. You were unique and separate, and you left some of that behind, each one of you, and I've seen this group gradually break down some barriers and boundaries and grow together. What I'd like to do is just very quickly reiterate some of the themes of the weekend, because I think they are part of this promising journey, this fruitful journey that we've been on. Exciting journey, in fact. If you recall, when we came here on Friday, we read the passage about Jesus going out to a lonely place. The idea that even the Son of God, after a hard day of healing and teaching and preaching, doing good stuff, in a sense bringing the kingdom, he wasn't just content to go to bed and get up the next morning and do it again. He really needed to go to a lonely place, which we said also means deserted place, also means desert in Greek. So for us, it also means wilderness. He goes to a wilderness in order to be alone a long while before dawn. And the disciples, of course, at that early stage of the ministry, can't understand that at all. Wilderness is what we came here for and what we separated from our life out there in order to discover something about. And it's the wilderness as mountains, but it's also, as Jackie talked about, a wilderness of community, a wilderness of searching in our own hearts for signs of presence. We called the first presentation a harsh wilderness out there, and I guess I was trying to point out that the modern world has moved away from being integrated with wilderness and religion as part of a daily understanding of life. It's been our temptation as modern people to put religion on a shelf apart, sort of like a holy book. Or if we do practice religion, we often get caught up in what Sandmeyer calls a spirituality of ascent, thinking that somehow we have to change our lives to be worthy of God. Somehow we have to get more involved in peace and justice issues, or we have to be more prayerful all the time, or we have to do something to our basic life in order to merit God, instead of this metaphor of a fruitful journey where God calls us and we walk, not really knowing where we go. The Holden Prayer is a prayer that reiterates that, not really knowing where we go, but only that God's hand is leading us. With that confidence, we go. Many of our friends and relatives and co-workers have done the same thing with nature and with wilderness. They've sort of put it apart from them in a place where they might enter it on vacation or think about it when they're seeing a Disney movie, but it isn't part of their everyday experience. And then we come to that summary in Merton that you read yesterday by yourselves in your special places. There's always the enormous temptation in all of life to diddle around in life, making itsy-bitsy friends and meals and journeys for itsy-bitsy years on end. It is so self-conscious, so apparently moral, simply to step aside from the gaps where the creeks and winds pour down, saying, "I never merited this grace," quite rightly, and then to sulk along the rest of your days on the edge of rage. It's one of the problems that I was trying to point out about the idea of a harsh wilderness, or a wilderness which is separate from us, or God which is separate from us, which is how we think about, how most modern people think about those ineffable and powerful things. They just don't live with them, they put them away, they don't go to the gaps. Then on Saturday, you know, we started out reading about Elijah. I thought that was real helpful, at least for me. Elijah, who was so cut off from God that even though he was talking to God in the passage, he wanted only to die. But then you remember God fed him with miraculous food in the wilderness and gave him a sacred journey that he was supposed to retrace, and brought him to the highest experience, the vision of God's power and glory right in front of him. This, to me, is a promise that we can creep back out of our self-centeredness, out of our alienation from God and from nature, and out of our sadness and our fear and loneliness through various forms of mediation, I call them. And this is actually more than an idea to me. I realized as I was working on this last session, it's been the story of the last couple of years for me as well. Like Elijah, I'm very good at what I do. I mean, the ministry that I do, I'm competent. People tell me I do good sermons, you know. I've in effect, at various times, defeated the prophets of Baal, you know. And like Elijah, over the past couple of years, however, I've often sat under the tree in the lonely place and wondered why I couldn't just die. I mean, sometimes you get so overwhelmed and burnt out, and while you're doing the right things, you feel nothing about, you don't feel anything profound or connecting about it. And people say, "Well, that was a good sermon," and you say, in your own mind, "Well, I got up at 5:30 this morning and I wrote it, and I didn't believe I could write it, so don't give me any credit," because and then you just write that off as another failure because you didn't do it on Tuesday. You did it on Sunday morning, sitting under the tree saying, you know, "I don't merit this. Why can't I just be a different person? Why can't I die?" And like Elijah, I find God replies in miraculous ways, recognizable ways, familiar ways. And one of them was this weekend for me. A sort of reply from God, an angel bringing sustenance. I'll tell you, I'm still not sure if it had more to do with you or had more to do with the wilderness. Because while this has been the most beautiful I've ever seen, this valley, I've been at Holden, I think, 5 times, I've also not seen a group pull together in 3 days like you've been doing. And it's really been a joy for me to see. And partly because I suppose that you were doing so much of it on your own, and I could sit back and receive from you, it was that much more of a sense of blessing and miracle, a gift from an angel. You've been more natural at this, I guess, than I expected, and it's been a real delight. And I guess what I've thought about is that you've done what people do when they're in touch with the holy other, which we talked about on Friday night when we had that chart on the wall. You've been finding poetry and song and a new language and dance, ways to express things, an evocative kind of language. You've all been doing it together. Each person, when they've had an opportunity to talk or been moved to talk, has been using words that have been pointing beyond to something that's other. Your faces and bodies have been enlivened by what you've been seeing and hearing and feeling. You've been telling us all stories about your lives and letting us come close to your own hearts, trusting us, trusting the group, and creating new things together with the rest of your triads. So this weekend has been an incredible fruitful journey, for me at least, and I think for you as well. And it's reminded me that I need to be more open to God's fecundity, God's feeding in the wilderness, and to remember that even though I don't know where I'm going when I'm standing on various docks of life waiting for various boats, that God will provide and the journey will be fruitful. One thing that I want to touch on, because I think it's been a real learning experience for me, is this business of the holy other, the last category in the chart, the numinous, the unnameable. These were the terms for God that I put along with wilderness in the last column. I put them there, and I called them, when I was being technical, placeholders, that is, words which refer to something which, like God's holy name, Yahweh, to the Jews, something that could not be explained, and in their case, barely even articulated, because it was so profound. I think I learned something about that this weekend. I learned that you and I are more Christians than I ever expected when I started this topic. I think I expected, maybe it's because I'm in the city and I deal with a lot of college students, but I deal with people who are much further over on the chart, much more self-centered. They're students, I guess. They have a lot of questions about God, and they really don't know how to evaluate experiences and what's important and what's not important. But I think you and I are more Christians, that is, we've been more enculturated and opened up by the medium of the center column, that is, the culture, the tradition, the religion, opened up to God, which is beyond. What I mean, I guess, is that you know God at first hand. You know and experience God in ways that God has been present to you. If you recall, on Friday afternoon, most of you put yourselves in the quadrant which was being able to know wilderness. Wilderness and I are definite friends or adversaries. I think most of you meant friends. You have experienced that, and that has been real to you. That, from the first, sort of startled me and caught me off guard. And there's a boldness, I guess, with which you've been speaking about your contact with God through the wilderness all through the weekend that's been exciting to me. I was talking to John Schilling the other morning, there you are, about how easily the group moved to talking about wilderness, not as a holy other. You see, you weren't talking about it as this mystical thing far off and inexplicable and incredible and beyond you, unnameable experience beyond words, but as a friend, almost, a friend to whom all of you were returning after a time away. You know, it's almost like an old acquaintance, a friend that you could trust, a friend that really wasn't scary. Dick's words come back again. I think most of you have had an experience or two that's been a little frightening, but when you come to wilderness, I don't think that's what you talked about so much. And that was a surprise to me. But I should have remembered, and I was talking to John about this, some things about what it means to be Christian. It means that God has come down. I mean, that's a basic, essential thing about being a Christian, is that God is not the holy other all the time, but that God has actually come down and opened up to us. It means that we can know God, and know God most clearly through Jesus, a man, a loving friend, a brother, sister. Jesus did not protect himself from us, but was not far off and beyond words, like a holy other, but rather he fit most wonderfully into the human heart and touched people in ways they never forgot. And it was so powerful that it altered not only society, but not only culture, but also nature. In this man, God shows that it's in the plan to redeem all the things that God created. At least this is what Paul says, and he says it a couple of places, so he mustn't have been drinking the first time he said it. That Christ is a cosmic Christ, and that all creation is going to be redeemed through Christ. Not just Christians, not just people, but all creation. Everything from the algae in our ponds to the galaxy beyond our ability to see. But what I discovered also talking to John was the fact that we killed this man. We killed this man, Jesus, our brother, and God's sign of power and grace. God gave us Jesus, and God left himself totally open in Jesus to what our response would be. And we killed him. Though we killed him, some of us became his disciples as well. So there's this kind of dichotomy. If you think about, you know, if you go to church on Passion Sunday and they do the reading of the Passion story in Matthew, Mark, or Luke, and they read it in parts, the congregation is always given the part of crucify him, crucify him. There's always part of us that is standing with the crowd, kind of oblivious, kind of excited, kind of stupid, insensitive, and not recognizing until later what we've done. But there's also part of us that long, if we are touched by Christ, there's a part of us that longs to be wholly his. So I think what I said to John, and I think this is really true, it never occurred to me before, that the wilderness is Jesus. And Jesus is the wilderness. That's why it was so easy for you to talk about the wilderness, to feel comfortable in the light of its nurture and challenge. The wilderness is Jesus in the same way all people are also Jesus, as we read in Matthew 25. Do any of you remember that that wonderful passage, Matthew 25, sheep and the goats? Can anybody tell me that story a little bit? Do you remember what it's about? It's a wonderful little tale.
Jesus, it's the judgment scene, and Jesus separates the people and basically says to the first group, welcome. You were, I was hungry and you fed me, I was naked and you clothed me, I was sick and in prison and you visited me. And people say, when did we do that? And he basically responds that inasmuch as you've done it to the least of these, my brothers, and you've done it unto me, welcome into the joy of the kingdom. And then he says to the other group, depart from me. I was hungry, you didn't feed me. I was sick, you didn't visit me. I was naked, you didn't clothe me. And same response, what did we see you and didn't help you? And he responds the same way, that because you haven't done it to others, you haven't done it to me.
Yeah. And I hope that as people who believe in Jesus, you really have that written in your brain, because that's real central. That when we look for Jesus, we're not going on a spiritual ascent to somebody who lived 2,000 years ago, whose principles we have to emulate, you know, and with lives of asceticism, but rather we're supposed to get muckied up down here, going to prisons where, you know, feeding people with AIDS, doing all kinds of things that are quasi-bizarre and dangerous and certainly unsavory, just like Jesus did. In essence, Jesus was finding himself in healing the lepers and eating with the tax collectors. It's a funny kind of thing, and I think the analogy goes as far as wilderness as well. God is present in the wilderness in ways that we can see and hear and taste, feel and embrace. God opens himself in wilderness just as God has opened himself in Jesus Christ, becoming part of the scene, becoming part of the world in which we live and move. And even as we could crucify Jesus as a response, so we can crucify the wilderness. God will allow us to do that. Now, as with Jesus, we don't talk much about the tragedy. I mean, I did a couple of sessions 2 summers ago about the sadness of the followers of Jesus after the crucifixion, because I think it's real helpful to us. Sometimes we don't really experience sadness deeply enough. We don't talk about that stuff because we go straight from Good Friday to Easter Sunday, and there really aren't any, many services in between where you say, boy, he's dead. What do we do now? We always say, no, he's risen, he's risen. Now, with creation, we're seeing what we're doing to creation as a kind of crucifixion. I mean, think about it. It may be that we can, in fact, do something irreversible to creation, whether it be through ozone or through the oceans or whatever. So we can be either sheep responding lovingly to God's presence in creation, celebrating, caring for creation and one another as part of creation, or we can be the goats, self-centered, using nature for our own ends and having a sort of mentality of the present time, as long as I have my cabin in the woods until I'm 65. I don't care what happens to the rest. Never going into the gaps, living itsy-bitsy lives. And if we do that, our lives indeed will be as Bill has said, a damnation. You know, go out to that place where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. I never like those kind of judgment passages, but I guess the other thing that I learned from you and from this weekend is that wilderness is Jesus in the same way that the bread and wine are Jesus when we celebrate the Eucharist. I guess I can't say it more simply than that. Wilderness is Jesus in the same way that bread and wine are Jesus. I don't expect you to get this maybe in one telling, but maybe you can just think on it. What I'm going to be talking about is wilderness as a sacrament. And the reason that I want to talk about wilderness as a sacrament is because I think we do pretty well with the sacraments. That is, we don't understand what they are, but we do them and we get a lot from them. You know what I mean? It's kind of a shame that so many different forms of Christianity have duped it out, you know, over the sacraments, because it's a mystery and you really can't define it very well. But I do want to look at how some of the things that Luther says about sacraments, because I think he was right. He says sacrament is a simple element, like water, wine, or bread. Very simple thing, nothing complicated. Connected with God's word, and it happens in community, and it needs to be received by faith. That's why I think it's so important to have a little bit of background in regards to our thinking about meeting God in the wilderness, because wilderness should not just be something you personally enjoy, or something about which you despair because it's being destroyed, or something that you buy and sell, or something that you map and promote or try to save. I think wilderness should be like a sacrament, something that we honor together with our lives, that we do it together and we can't do it alone, and that that we do it because of faith, or maybe faithfulness would be a better word. Both words are translated the same in the New Testament, that we can have faith in God, but we can also be faithful to God, or God can be faithful to us, or have faith in us. There needs to be a lot of faith, I think, around wilderness. This whole idea of wilderness is too important to be left to chance, or individual taste, or good taste, or bad taste. Just as our salvation is so important that we gather together once a week to celebrate it together. I mean, it's hard to experience the love that God has for us if we don't have Jesus Christ close to us. And one of the ways that we do that, I think very appropriately, is through the mystery of eating and drinking together. Eating and drinking is a very basic thing. It's a way that people show their love for each other and experience God's nurture for them through these simple elements. So I believe that we need to bring wilderness, nature, creation with us as we live, honoring creation even as we do Jesus in his body and blood, letting creation, wilderness, empower us to live new and redeemed lives just as we do the sacraments. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't too. I mean, you know, you go to church some Sundays and, you know, the sermon's rotten, or there's some kid yelling behind you. But I think it's kind of wonderful because, again, we're not into a spirituality of ascent. It doesn't have to be perfect. The more you muck around in it, the more the journey is funny. Some of the stories that we told last night are these stupid disasters. Dick points out again and again, wilderness isn't dangerous. We're dangerous to ourselves. And the stories are frightening, bizarre. We have to muck around even more and more. I mean, I think that's what Merton was saying. You know, spend the afternoon. Do something outrageous. You can't take it with you. You can't have a perfect Eucharist where everything feels right. It's much better that the kids howl and scream. You have something to talk about when you go home, you know? God. It's the same thing. I mean, you know, if you're out in the wilderness and it doesn't work out perfectly, you can talk about the snow slopping down on your head from the tree that you sat under like a stooge. You know, there you were looking for God, and all you got was slush on your forehead, you know? And you know, I think to do this thing about creation best, we need to have in one hand, this is maybe true, maybe not true, but I think one hand we need to have Christian scriptures so that we know Jesus most deeply. But in the other hand, I think it would be wonderful to have Native American writings and teachings, because it's through Native Americans, there may be other traditions, but that's the one that, as we evidenced yesterday, we know best. So why can't we take these two together to come to a sacramental understanding of nature? Clearly, the Native Americans had a sense of God's presence in nature. We might know a little bit more, maybe not, because we know that God actually gave himself, God made himself totally vulnerable in Jesus Christ and loves us that deeply. You put the two together, you have a pretty powerful theology of creation, a pretty powerful spirituality of wilderness. You know, if you can hold those two together and recognize that when Chief Seattle is talking about everything being interconnected, you're talking about the body of Christ, you're talking about to the least of these, my brethren. It's the same idea. Christianity needs to be drawn into the world in a much more powerful way than some of the churches have been doing it recently. And we too need to continue, as Todd reminds me, to go into the wilderness, because it's irreducible. You can't think it, just like you can't think the Eucharist. You got to eat the bread and wine. You can't think the wilderness. You got to go out there and let it touch you. Let it be on your skin and in your eyes and in your nose and mouth. So that's about it, though. I guess I have two more pages. One last thing it says here, two pages. One last thing I want to say is buy this book, Original Blessing. If you haven't bought it, you should buy it. It's by Matthew Fox, and it's a very straightforward investigation of the dichotomy between original sin and the religion which came out of original sin, the sense that we are broken and fall short of the glory of God and need to be redeemed, all of which is somewhat true. The dichotomy between that and original blessing, which is the sense that God made us good, God gave us a good creation, God has called us on a promising journey, and God will provide for us as we go along, and that we are good and loved by God. The problem with original sin, he points out, is that we feel wretched from the start and unworthy. And then we don't notice the wonderful things around us that God has given to us. We don't receive them as gifts because we feel that we are inadequate as persons. Well, chapter 2 in this book, and he has something like 26 chapters. Chapter 2 is called Creation as Blessing and the Recovery of the Art of Savoring Pleasure. Isn't that nice? Creation as Blessing and the Recovery of the Art of Savoring Pleasure. I think this is what I mean when I'm talking about sacraments. I mean that the deepest pleasure, the comfort beyond all human understanding of knowing that we are God's and that God loves us forever through death to eternal life, that's what a sacrament is. It's a deep pleasure. Nature can take us to that experience, to profound sigh or gasp that we feel when we were taken up to the gaps and sit there and make it our home. Of course, it takes insight and patience. We must accept the pleasure. If the pleasure is there and we turn from it and say, I don't deserve this, we don't get it. We need to accept the pleasure, the sacrament. We need to accept the gift. We need to accept the blessing. I want to read a quote that Fox puts in this second chapter from Frederick Turner, who was a historian of the last century. This quote just absolutely blows me away. He writes about the explorers who came to this nation. To those who followed Columbus and Cortez, the New World seemed truly incredible because of the natural endowments. The land often announced itself with a heavy scent miles and miles into the ocean. Giovanni de Verrazzano, in 1524, smelled the cedars of the East Coast 100 leagues out. The men of Henry Hudson's Half Moon were temporarily disarmed by the fragrance of the New Jersey shore. When I read this in my congregation about 6 months ago, there was sustained laughter for about 15, 20 seconds. It's like they couldn't believe it. The fragrance of the New Jersey shore, right? While ships running further up the coast occasionally swam through large beds of floating flowers. Wherever they came inland, they found a rich riot of color and sound, of game and luxuriant vegetation. Had they been other than they were, they might have written a new mythology there. And I would add to this quote, had they been other than they were, they may have instituted a new sacrament there. But he continues on, as it was, they took inventory. As it was, they took inventory. Pleasure is one of the deepest spiritual experiences of our lives, according to Fox. And I agree with him. But it does not come easily to a society inundated by consumer consciousness, or where the churches are so out of touch with the presence of God and Jesus as a vulnerable, inviting, healing person coming away to a lonely place. Fox points out how we need to learn to savor. It needs the world needs savoring more than it needs inventory making. If we savored more, we would buy less. We would be less compulsive. We would be less unsatisfied. We'd also work less and play more. It was moving to me that Dick shared with us his struggle in this regard, that in the presence of our community and in this valley, he could make a life decision that has to do partly with pleasure, with being more in contact with the deep spirit of his life. And I almost feel like we've been partners as he's made that decision. And I'm sure that others of us are going to be making decisions coming out of this weekend that we've all participated in. If we savored more, we would communicate more deeply, relate more fully to one another. We would compete less regularly, and we would celebrate more authentically. We would be relating more deeply to ourselves, to creation and all its blessedness, to history past and future, to the now and to God. The source of all authentic pleasure, Fox claims, is God. And we know that from Jesus Christ, who was accused of being a glutton and a wine bibber, because he was so part of the pleasures of the people around him that the spiritual ascent types of his Jewish religion just couldn't understand it. And also, I mean, as I'm reading this stuff, I hope that you're thinking about what your parents taught you about religion. They didn't teach pleasure. I mean, few people taught pleasure as a part of religion, that to truly enjoy something is of God. You know, and that's what I'm talking about, standards. I mean, if you have the right standards, your life becomes a much richer place instead of being confused about what really is of God and what isn't. If it's pleasurable, Fox is saying, it is of God. Anyone who has taken time to savor the blessings of life know that they are profoundly, deliciously, sacramentally, deeply sweet. Isn't that nice? Matthew Fox. This is a crucial time for all of us, I think, to be engaged in a new vision of God and of the wilderness. I think we stand at a time when we can make some important changes in our own lives and also in the lives of the churches we belong to, the families we belong to, community associations, ecological groups, whatever. And I want to remind you that the thought that I had with conversation with Scott the other day, because I think it's really important for all of us. It has to do with this savoring of pleasure thing, where Scott was wondering if the church wouldn't undergo a renewal if it didn't get in touch with peace and justice issues or something more current and relevant. And I said that I didn't think it was the integrity of our commitments which attract people either to the church or to anything. But as in the case of Holden, I think that the main attraction to the long-term community and the main thing that people take away from here is the joy that people have in play and the pleasure that they take. I mean, that people come up to the microphone sort of and do funny things, and everybody likes it, and you don't have to be great, you know, and you can forget a line and everybody's supportive. I think that's what people take away from Holden, is a sense of the pleasure of being alive. I don't think we need to be doing the right thing. I think doing the right thing is another form of ascent. It's getting away from who we really are. I think the truly right thing is to be loving other people and to be experiencing creation deeply. And then, out of that joy, when you do the right thing, it's really right. You know, it really has a power and a convincingness. I don't know, maybe it's not true, but I think we've met God in the wilderness. I think this weekend has been a real sign of how easy it is to meet God in the wilderness. Wilderness is, I think, like a sacrament to us. It's a simple element of our life. like bread or baptismal water, in which we cannot but see the breaking forth of God's love when we go into it. And so through our promising fruitful journey into the wilderness, we are able to lift up a relationship with the God of the universe, which is joyous, loving, gentle, thoughtful, but also wild. It's kind of untamed as well. Not only have we met God in the wilderness, but I just want to speak for myself. You've opened God's grace again to me. And I hope as you reincorporate yourselves into your lives back there, that you take some of the joy and peace, some of the wildness and the holiness along with you. Matthew Fox's 18th chapter is titled, How Our Lives as Works of Art Spiral Beauty Back into the World. I bet you'd like that. Mm-hmm. Spiral beauty back into the world. I made reference to your gasp earlier. You'll have to hear it on the tape. How our lives as works of art. Can you imagine? Your life is a work of art. You know? Your life is a work of art. How our lives as works of art spiral beauty back into the world. Well, you've spiraled beauty back into my life. I don't know. You may not be good at doing it in the world, but I'll make my statement. And I hope you can keep meeting God and dancing that beauty into the lives that you meet back there. And of course, as I promised at the beginning, now I'm getting silly. So I'll close with the title of this last session as a sort of evocative word to all of you. Stay wild and stay holy. Amen, amen. Come, Lord Jesus. What's nice about being a leader is that you get to say stuff, final statements, and then it's up to you guys to respond. We have a little bit of time if you want to say anything in response to the weekend. We may. Why don't we just, if there's anything you want to say about this last session, some ideas that are percolating right now, ideas of sacrament or scope of the whole weekend, we can do that. We also have an evaluation which I'll pass out to you in a couple of minutes as the discussion slows on this particular session. And then we might want to talk about the whole weekend a little bit just in terms of evaluation so we can give Holden a sense of how it worked and what they should be planning on for next year.
You know, when you talked about wilderness and sacrament, it would be neat if they did this again to have a service outside, either matins in the morning or vespers in the evening, to actually find a place outside where we could all gather.
I think that's real good. Yesterday morning when I missed matins and I ran to Dick, we made that comment. Because I thought it was breakfast, and he goes, no, it's just matins. And I thought, oh, okay. You know, and then he made a comment. He goes, boy, they don't know, but we're really the real cathedral out here. You know what I just...
Yeah.
I absolutely agreed. It was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Or last night in the moonlight. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would have been a great time to do a Vespers.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we should assign that to one of the triads for next time.
Mm-hmm.
To find a time and place and do kind of a wilderness worship service.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be wonderful.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Mm-hmm. I've got one thing I want to share. A lot of times I don't always communicate what I set out to communicate, and I talked a lot about fear and my concern that we teach fear of wilderness or we hold fear within us of wild places. And I want to remind you that the absence of fear is not the presence of bravery in the context that I make my comments. Nor do I intend to set myself up as brave. The absence of fear, as I said, is the presence of faith. And it is the presence of awareness of ourselves and our surroundings. And that's how I mean it.
Mm-hmm.
That you learn to know wild places. And in so doing, you diminish any fear that you might have of them.
Mm-hmm.
in that it is a test of faith. Faith is, you know, faith is one of those powerful triads that, that the Catholic Church teaches as virtue, and the faith, hope, and charity, and it's that faith I'm talking about. It's faith in really translating all the words and all the theology and philosophy into an inner feeling, and that's what will give you the absence of fear of wild places. It's a test. It is a real test of faith, and it can be achieved. I always find it somewhat sad when I find people that avoid wild places on a solitary basis oftentimes because they hold some fear. And it's not really a place of fear.
Last night when I told my little story about and we talked about the fear, it brings it up again, about the log rolling on me, and of course my foot was pretty mushed up. Hmm. Kind of the end of that though, and I'm really coming to terms with that now, that I don't do what I did as a child, and I remember I got up to the house and got my sleeping bag, of all things, it was real stormy, and ended up taking it down and laying on the beach, literally all day, and kind of sleeping on and off, and pulling it up. I remember it was real cold, zipping it out, but it was like, I think we have more sense about, I had to come back to be okay, and I didn't want to be in the house, and I didn't want to be around, and that's the kind of thing I don't do anymore, and by the time my parents finally said, get up here, we're going to have dinner, it was okay. I mean, the ocean was okay, and those big old waves were okay, and I said, I knew I wasn't supposed to go do that, and the rhythm and the sound of them, and I mean, everybody that goes to this place where we have, and you know, that loves this crashing of these waves. I mean, you don't go there, you just sleep like a baby. But what I do now is if I hear something, I tend as an adult not to spend the time to make peace with it. Mm-hmm. Because now I'm out, and yes, I've had this feeling, or I've had an experience, but, you know, I really should stop and get gas, and then if I stop and get gas, I might as well get groceries, and then if I'm going to do that, I don't bring it to a coming to peace with whatever it is I've heard, or been drawn to, or been called to solve, and that's something I've got to come away with this weekend, knowing, like that experience, you've got to take the time then to bring it back to not being afraid of it, or to seeing it for what it is, but, and I think that's...
Having these formulas which are, you know, if I don't get the groceries on this trip, then we won't have anything to eat this weekend, to somehow get home and figure out that you don't have anything to eat this weekend and just soak some beans and make some beans because you had such a wonderful other experience. And adults are so good at taking care of comfort but missing exhilaration, you know.
Would you say that again? Just that last sentence.
Adults are so good at taking care of comfort and missing exhilaration.
We're making hay when we should be making whoopee.
I can see what Dawn's going to take home with her.
She brought it with her.
One thing that has occurred to me is over the weekend is just taking a new perspective.
I'm sorry. My father's very ill. And it's really interesting because my perspective of the wilderness came totally from him. My mom grew up in the Appalachian Mountains, and she always said, I grew up that way. Why would I go out there for pleasure? You know, it's... it's going to be really simple. Anyway, he always, you know, tried to encourage us to do that. And one thing he used to do, it just cracks me up, and I hadn't thought about it for years, till last night. get rid of this voice. Was his comment, I was probably about 8 or 9 years old, and I was watching the trees, you know, it was really, really windy. We were out on a peninsula. And I always just thought the branches moved. I thought this big, firm, you know, stalk never moved at all. And so he made us all lay down right next to the base of the tree and just watch the whole stalk go back all the way over your body. And I remember moving my head back as a tree. It's waved back and forth.
Hmm.
And it's just so different to see the wind affect the trees from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
From looking at it far away and just seeing the leaves go.
Hmm.
It's a new perspective. It's been real hard.
Mm-hmm.
To I think a lot of times let go.
Mm.
At least for me, to really enjoy the wilderness experience because of all the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Of the association of
mm-hmm.
Doing with the grief of someone
mm.
you care about that's dying.
Mm.
But that wasn't what I wanted to share. What I wanted to share in really joy and excitement was the fact that it's just new perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same things I've grown up with all my life.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing the trees move, but it's just a new,
mm-hmm.
totally new perspective. Putting myself in a different position.
Yeah. I think, see, that's what I'd want us to try to develop as a theory of a sacrament, because sacraments you go to again and again and again, week after week. And even the problem with traditional Protestantism is that they have this one powerful experience of the tree moving, and then it's so powerful that you don't want to go back to it. You go to Eucharist once a year, and it's real powerful. But you don't experience God's nurturing love through food and through touch and through, you know, whatever it happens to. And that's why I like Todd's idea of you need to go out there, you know, once a week. You need to just do it, you know. You can't have the body and blood of Christ without wine and bread, you know. You can't have the wilderness without going on a walk. Whether, you know, you're just walking down the road here. You know, some people think that you can only go in the wilderness if you take cross-country skis and go up that direction. No, I mean, you can walk down the road here and stand still and see. You can look out your window out of Chalet 14 and experience more powerfully the presence of God. But it needs to have the component of wildness to it in some sense, you know, that which is beyond us. I don't know, I haven't developed a theory of wilderness as sacrament, but I would want to have some standards, some, you know, the ineffability of it or the power of it, just like we want to have standards about Eucharist. You don't use Doritos, you know, you use bread. I guess you could use Doritos.
I use both
coffee and
Pepsi, Diet Pepsi.
And Jesus took a tortilla. And looking to heaven, said,
"Lefse."
In Polsko, we use lefse.
This is the Norwegian tortilla.
Anything else on this session, or do you want to move to evaluation? Thank Patty for sharing that. That's
mm-hmm.
hard stuff. Real hard stuff. I suppose one of my struggles is realizing that work, that I've used work to cover up a lot of the sadness and vulnerability that I feel in my life. And the reason that you had triads this weekend is because I'm learning how not to work so much and to let other people do stuff. And you saw how much better it was. I mean, the weekend wouldn't have been anything had you not been doing the work. So there are ways in which, and Dick's decision to put up a retirement date, I mean, these are the kinds of things where we take steps to, I mean, that's a hard thing. I mean, you know, I don't want to speak for Dick, but I mean, I don't know, I'm not a person who's worked in a profession that long, but I know that when I get to that point, it's going to be hard, you know, to say, okay, time to shift gears and stuff. You know, and I think that's what it means to be a human being, is to be in touch with our vulnerability, you know, and the sacraments, nature, and Jesus surround us with grace and comfort
as we go through those kinds of hard times. You don't actually have to do it now, but if you want to,
you can.
I unfortunately don't have anything with which to write, so. But keep in your hand as you fill it out the syllabus, because it has, let's just go through it. What were the most meaningful aspects of the retreat to you? Describe the impact. What did not happen at the retreat that you would have wanted? Please rate and comment on specifics of the retreat schedule. Now you have six slots here, and it looks like we may have a ton of things to retreat in, evaluate. There are the three or four things that where I was talking, there are the two or three times that Dick was talking. There are the solos that we did. I don't know how you want to do that, but if you refer to the syllabus that you have, at least we can get some sense of comments that you might have on things. Advance information number 4, 5 is suggestions for future retreats, 6 suggestions of persons for retreats and other comments. Use the back if necessary, which of course you can't use because it's recycled paper. So you may have to either write tiny or append a page. But I've found that in retreats that I've done, when people talk a little bit about the different aspects of the retreat that really worked for them, or things that they, ideas that they had to make things work better, it reminds everybody of things that, ways that they might better evaluate the retreat. So I'd ask you to just offer those things that really did work for you, or new insights or something, so that we can all hear them, or also ideas that you had. Somebody should write down that idea of having an outdoor worship. That's a really good idea. And since the triads are a new thing this time, too, you may want to comment on how that worked.
Some of the 6 numbers you want us to fill in.
Fill in stuff that's important to you or whatever.
Do we mail this back to Holden?
Yeah, either give them back to Holden or mail them back, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it really is helpful. I mean, Jackie looks through these things, and the first time I did the retreat, she handed me the evaluations, and I looked at them, and they gave me some ideas for what had happened the year before, how to go with it. So any comments?
Oh, well, one suggestion I'd like to make. I've gone on a number of different kinds of retreats. This is the only one I've ever done like this, and I guess a big part of retreat for me is always just some reading and reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed this weekend tremendously, but I felt like I never really had any time to do that. It was an effort. I've been trying to keep a journal, and it was an effort to find 10 minutes to just write down what happened in my journal so I wouldn't remember. And while I was writing, I thought, I can't even believe that we did all this in one day. And while all the sessions were really valuable to me, and I wouldn't say throw that one out, just a sense that I had an hour. I didn't get to the library. This is the first time I've ever been. I would love to explore the library a little bit, because I'm sure there's things in there that
mm-hmm.
I would just love to look at. And for me, reading is a real appropriate way for kind of recharging my battery. So I felt a loss
mm-hmm.
of that, and I don't know how it would fit in terms of time-wise, but
mm-hmm.
it's just something that I would really like to do.
It's a good point. I've also noticed that sometimes people take in sessions and don't come to other sessions, and I think that might be a way that people compensate for that. And if you felt like there was too much going on and you wanted more time. Also, does anybody have any ideas how to, should that time be totally unstructured? My concern about Holden is that there's so much stuff going on at all times that when you cut people totally loose, like if we hadn't had the triad reflection things at the end of the day, which we tried a little bit last year, but they never worked, only 3 or 4 people would come. My sense was that the retreat really wasn't building, that people weren't talking about what was happening and helping each other to focus. And at the same time, Holden was sort of drawing people away into this and that, and, you know, volleyball here, and, you know, a little song fest there. And so that people got, it was almost as if the retreat was really titled then Holden with a sidelight on wilderness, you know, where Holden and eating and drinking and coffee hours and stuff like that became as much the focus as the actual subject matter.
Well, just being here for the first time, it seems really difficult to me to make the distinction between entering the rest of the community and still preserving the part of the retreat that you came up here for. And I thought that part went pretty well in terms of the announcements and the sessions and mm-hmm. feeling that even though there were all these people and we were part of the community, that there was this core group of people that mm-hmm. you were getting to know better and better, and things were going well. Mm-hmm. So that seemed to work.
Good. Thanks.
Something that I think could be added that would be beneficial and would be consistent with the themes of pleasure and bonding with one another would be in the initial sessions, maybe just the first one or maybe a couple of times, to do some icebreaker activities. I'm thinking mm-hmm. specifically of improvisational theater games at a very non-threatening level.
Mm-hmm.
Games that are really fun, that get people touching each other, that get people moving, that get people talking, that draw
mm-hmm.
the child
and
out
laughing,
of them,
yeah.
and
yeah.
laughing,
mm-hmm.
To break down those barriers we all came in with, because as you pointed out, it's a transition in.
Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, the quadrant thing, you know, got people talking, and it gave you information about us and us,
mm-hmm.
ideas about each other, but I think had we done some of those types of activities first and then done that, we would have been looser,
mm-hmm.
more willing
mm-hmm.
to share, and the kinds of bonds that we're now feeling seem to be coming late to me. Maybe retreats are always that way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're just starting to really feel close, then you have to go home. But
mm-hmm.
I know I've done a lot with people in that area of theater games, just to get them loose and knowing each other and
mm-hmm.
relaxing with each other, and I just think it could be
mm-hmm.
a delightful thing.
Good idea.
It works.
That's a real good point, because you know, I only felt like I got to know the triad that first day, you know, because we were the only persons I really had a chance to sit down and talk with.
Mm-hmm.
Those could be times.
Mm-hmm. One of the highlights for me was Dick's two sessions on reading the land, the slides, and going out.
Mm-hmm.
But it, for a couple of reasons. One is just how it demonstrated the interconnection of us in the wilderness as well, you know, as you see the wilderness, how it all works together and the ecosystems all interrelated, and then you begin to get more and more of a concept of how we fit into that. I almost feel that, you know, had I gone through that first, then, you know, it would have, you know, helped me to get more on track, you know, after some of the other sessions and the solo sessions. Just because it was real, you know, it's the kind of thing you come in and you can just relate to instantly. It took me a while to kind of get on the wavelength of, you know, the sessions, the more of the
mm-hmm.
the other and
mm-hmm.
all that kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
so it's the wilderness part is a good way to move towards spirituality instead of talking about spirituality
yeah.
first,
like
and then trying to.
Mm-hmm.
The solo experience, I think, was real hard to throw myself into that morning because I was
mm-hmm.
still so tired from sitting all day long from the drive to get here
mm-hmm.
that at that point in time I needed to do some physical exercise in the morning, and I really wasn't ready for the solo experience till the next day,
mm-hmm.
at least for me.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to have heard more of Dick when we first got here the first night and the next day. I felt like I wanted to hear him much sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more of a sensate person than an intuitive, and I'm I need a sensei. So I'm more drawn to Dick than I am to you. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the lecture this morning. And it's been true for about everyone, after about 10 minutes, I don't hear anything you say. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're more, you're up there with the words. Mm-hmm. And Dick's more down with tactile, mm-hmm. More reality things. So I myself, if I would have been taking better care of myself, after about 10 minutes today, I would have gone out and gone for a walk, mm-hmm. and then come back for the last 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I need more of Dick and less of you for myself, for mm-hmm. who I am. Mm-hmm. And more of Dick, especially at the beginning, mm-hmm. the tactile, the sensate stuff, mm-hmm. To keep my
attention. To make a connection, yeah. between what's out there and what's...
I'd like to see much shorter lectures, 15, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, and then the interaction. The idea of having, I think it was yesterday, there was a 50-minute lecture, and then things started going across the room. Mm-hmm. And I need a 15-minute lecture, and then the rest mm-hmm. of the time, interaction. Mm-hmm. Dick said something at the beginning that I liked, that he said that he sees himself as a coach. And mm-hmm. I like and bring things out from people. And I guess I'm 37 now, and I've heard a lot of lectures through 2 BAs and master's program and other things. Mm-hmm. And I don't come to Holden. Even when I come in the summer, I don't come for lectures at all. Mm-hmm. I come, and if I come to a lecture, I just come for one, maybe I'll go to two during a week. And I'll go, and sometimes only for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I'll pick up things. I pick up a lot of things, and I take them with me. But I need to just have shorter lecture times and more mm-hmm. interaction amongst people. Mm-hmm. That's where a lot of my learning occurs, is hearing the things being drawn out from others. That's what catches me and grabs yeah. me. Mm-hmm. I don't need a well-developed lecture going, I pick up things, what I need to from mm-hmm. different people.
Good, that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. I think that when you first started and you had the four areas, I think that was real valuable. And I think that your chart on the self, I'm going to say the society, mm-hmm. and the other, with the mediation concept, I think it was real valuable. I guess my only comment is that it probably would have really hit if we'd have gone out first and done the interpretive, or the non-interpretive, but mm-hmm. then that chart really comes alive because we're trying to fit in.
Yeah.
To this thing you've put mm-hmm. up there, mm-hmm. and it's real clear that kind of a juxtaposition of those two mm-hmm. lectures. I think Jackie hit on real well. I think you complement each other very well, and I wouldn't have liked it with either one of you only. I really liked this with both people. Very good. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to contradict Todd. I guess I'm a different kind of learner. I'm a slow learner. That's why I'm a surgeon. That's what they say about medical doctors know everything and do nothing, and surgeons know nothing and do everything. Actually. But, you know, you have my eyeballs rolling. I that session with the chart going across there. But you know, if I'd have taken off after 15 minutes, I would have never understood what you were talking about. I wouldn't have gotten the full meat of it. And that really gave me permission to seek God in the wilderness. I've had this dichotomy of guys who had, yeah, going to church in the woods. It's just a good excuse to go to the woods and not go to church. You know, and we hear that. You know, and it's helped me with the, I haven't really thought that, but I haven't really been able to solidify, like I say, I'm a slow learner and I teach myself very few things. Mm-hmm. So I needed that session, and I needed the whole length of that, I think, even though my eyeballs were rolling sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, and yet I agree in some ways. You know, they tell us in medicine that you got the audience for 10 minutes, and anything else you say, they're not going to hear.
Yeah, that
so
actually
don't back off too far.
That sounds like a decent model to to try to have shorter stuff, more pointed stuff, more conversation. It's going to be hard to get people out very, very much on Friday night because they're tired and need to get to know each other, but something a little bit more hands-on in terms of getting to know one another. Sort of get a theme for the weekend out there, and then maybe even do some slides and stuff the first night just to get a feel for what to look for out there. And then go out, read the wilderness, read the land on Saturday a little bit. Maybe have some time on Saturday afternoon to be outside, and then Saturday night do a lot of conversation as a group about what's been going on.
I would like to have heard early on, just to go around the room and people say what experiences they've had in the wilderness. Because there's a lot of people in this room who've had a lot of, I think Don, had lots and lots of experiences in the wilderness. And I would like to have heard that early on, to hear some of the stories.
But yeah, I want to say that one of the difficulties of Holden and difficulties with this group is that the people who come here are so wonderful that one of my experiences last year when we did a kind of go around in the beginning was that it took all of an hour and a half and
good.
It didn't work.
It didn't work.
It didn't work. People didn't remember it because they didn't even know what the other person was and they were sort of coming from... It was before a kind of gelling had happened. So what you say is right, but it's very hard to do. To get people in Holden Village to gel. I've tried it frequently at different times at this village. Sometimes you can do it if there are too many people around or it's too short a period of time. Holden really works against it. It really works against a group coming together. So there is a sort of limit to how fast you can go. Because as soon as you leave this room, you're up there and there's a whole group of people and you forget, what was that guy's name? Because you're not talking to him at Sufferin. And you mistake him with another bearded guy who's from Holden. And But you?
I'm just going to say, I think that it's really hard from year to year to determine what to do. I think you should have some basic things because I think each group is different. You have to read the group. Things that could work are like on Saturday, just taking a packed lunch maybe or something like that. And what I would have liked to have seen is maybe doing something as a group out. I mean, we only did really one group activity outside. And I think that it needs more than that. I would have liked to have seen, especially because I'm an individual, and while I like groups, it's easy for me to be alone too. And so I would have kind of liked to have more of a balance with the group. And because I was very pleased with the schedule, because I was like, gosh, I have a lot of free time, and I didn't expect that. But I think I expected more group, and I didn't get enough group, I guess, in some ways. And what I mean by that, maybe an idea would be to pack a lunch up and just to sit around and eat lunch and maybe do an additional, I think that you need to hear this talk a little bit earlier, maybe do some other things, and then from there go out and do your quiet thing, because I think then you get a direct way to correlation between, you know, the group experience and then individual experience. It really sets you off. I don't know, that's kind of my opinion. Mm-hmm. And the other reason I think Dick's talk should become a little earlier, maybe even just a slideshow or something, is because even though I spend a lot of time outside, it really keeps me into the small things, listening and to seeing the small little things in nature that I just often overlook because I like big picture. And so that's what I think.
I think that would also key into helping to focus in on the solo experience. You know, you kind of have these ideas on how to focus in on that tree or that plant.
Definitely increased awareness, for sure.
Another thing, too, is that you were mentioning it was hard to find time to read, and I know exactly what you mean. And I don't know if this, I guess after being up here, I kind of feel like I've done a lot of different things, so it was easier for me to withdraw myself from to find time to read. And that's what was also nice, is because I didn't feel like anybody was breathing down my shoulder to go, if I wanted to pick myself up from something and go read and have solitude, I didn't feel like I was in any way pressured to do something. And that made it enjoyable for me, because I always like to have control of everything. It made it easy for me just to kind of come in and really enjoy and not feel like I was tied to the chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess what I, after 12 years of Catholic school, I needed someone to say that it was okay if I missed a session. I felt really guilty about it. Okay.
Your fingers were the rule. We went to the
internet. And just to say, you know, if there's something that you feel that you need to do, you know, that it's okay to excuse yourself, and I didn't know if it was okay or not.
Let me ask a question. One of the things
I kind of agree about the time to read. How would you feel about pre-work? Like, if all the people coming here were sent to Chief Seattle and a couple of others.
I thought about that. I was just saying that. Something to read before you got here.
So, you see, I think a key, you know, in all my career, I've worked with groups and led groups and within the service, but also outside. And one of the things that struck me the most, and it doesn't matter whether you take over a new ranger district, you'll find if you took over the INIAT district a few years ago, you'd find that you're not a part of it yet because everybody dates there from a common experience they had. And in their case, it happens to be the 70 fires. You went to the Mapleton district, it'd be the 64 or 63 Columbus Day storm. Something that they encountered became a group experience and they dealt with. Groups come together when they share a common experience. So these ideas about an outdoor exercise, an outdoor service, some shared common experience the first day, I think would really start getting that to happen and it may be Lori's idea. Those things, you're right, you have to have somebody that's really good at that. We did a lot of that in the Forest Service when we first got into civil rights. And some of them were pretty dangerous. They exposed raw emotions and nerves and people weren't quite ready. So you have to have someone very expert to do those, and then it works. But but some small, shared, common experience that you start relating to. And I think somehow that needs to be structured in.
Originally they were talking about an overnight, weren't you guys? Thinking about an overnight, a winter overnight?
Yeah, I think that's about the only one enthusiastic for it.
I think that would be dangerous because I think you're going to have different levels of
people. Oh, yeah. That's why we got away from it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you could do that overnight close enough to camp that if something went wrong, you would probably wouldn't be in trouble anyways. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a thought on that.
Or you could take the approach that the survivors will all enjoy it. I think that's adding a new threat. And the threat is the last thing in the world you want to introduce. Yeah. It's just a shared common experience. It's a simple one, a comfortable one, a very humanistic closing one. Mm-hmm. You know, makes it really comfortable for people to be themselves.
But, you know, that idea, too, that you brought up with pre-reading, like, if we'd all somehow found that Chief Seattle thing, and when we met people on the boat landing and we found out they were coming up for here, did you read that thing? You know, what did you think of it? Yeah. That would have been a great bridge to start talking to all the people that you met coming up here.
Right.
And also to ask yourself, maybe, you know, what do you expect to get out of the retreat? Because then, you know, you're focusing before you come in. And, I mean, for me, it took me a while to kind of focus. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, in 24 hours, I'm thinking about what I could do. And why I try to force that on my mind, it's still there, it's still reality. And it took me a whole day to look back and think, gosh, 24 hours ago I was doing this, and now I'm looking ahead. And I think that it helps one focus. Anyway.
I think it's really a good idea. However, I think when people sign up before they receive that, everybody is coming to Holden, like you said, it is hard to pull a group together because people come with their own agendas. Mm-hmm. If I had gotten the Chief Seattle thing, you know, what that just brought up to me, and I talked about that before, which I didn't expect, was the whole interconnectedness of us all. That wasn't something I thought that was going to be something I would spend time thinking about, and it turned out to be through reading that Chief Seattle thing. And my point is, I think in sending out something prior to us all coming, it does set an agenda. It does narrow it down. And so I think it has to be real carefully chosen so that people can come not feeling like they have to work on that agenda or that concept. Because so many individual decisions and things like that are worked on.
And it would also could be, I mean, if I'd say, well, we'd say, I recommend you get this book, then there'd be the people who read the book, people who didn't read the book, people who liked it.
Yeah, I think a book would be too ambitious for most people. I mean, it'd have to be a short read. Yeah. Or even a poem, you know, it could just be a poem.
You could send them Laurie's poem from this year.
Yeah.
which we all had copies of.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
That was a great poem, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have our addresses.
No pressure there.
There's only 20 of us, times 25 cents is a mere $5 commitment.
Jeff, something very powerful I felt was Merton's paragraph that he gave us as kind of a little gift tied up that was so perfect to have that given to us and not to open it until we found our special place.
Yeah.
That was one of the high points to me on the retreat. And it's interesting to me that for years I've been doodling this drawing of hills and a stream and the sun. And it dawned on me, my special place, I didn't know that. The special place I picked was exactly that image. It was kind of spooky that it came to me that that's my doodle I've been drawing for years. It's right in front of me.
Another good book is Henry Nouwen's Out of Solitude. I recommend it to
I think the camera game would be wonderful to play.
Oh.
Like the second day.
I
wish we would have had time for that.
Maybe you could do that as an icebreaker the first afternoon. Take a walk where you're not threatening people who don't have skis, or you know, some people are snowshoeing or don't know how to use skis. Just walk the bridge down there or something.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, if you did a couple things first to just get people used to touching each other and laughing together, and then you did that.
You could do some of that sensitivity stuff there.
Yeah.
You could do the camera bit as a leader maybe a couple of times just to get people sort of into that.
That one where we put a name before our own name that started with the same initial as our first name.
Mm-hmm.
And went around the circle with that. It's a good way to remember names and say something about ourselves.
That's interesting because that's how Todd and I realized that we met each other 3 years ago. 3 years ago at one of the winter retreats we had here, because I didn't remember anyone's name. I just said, oh, well, were you there when Mel and Mike was here? You know, I remember Mel and Mike, you know. No one was last name was, but that's real good.
Well, we should turn to the, unless somebody else has something to say, we have a last triad offering.
Should we take a couple minutes break and allow people to get their cameras and if they want to do that? Meet in about 5 minutes back down here?
Yeah. Back down here, okay.
Bring your coats. What do we need?